Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Left of Straight Show with your host, Scott Fullerton, as we discuss everything under the rainbow sun, from LGBT issues to foodies, entertainment to books. Join us as we talk to some of the most interesting leaders and celebrity LGBT guests and allies on the internet. So grab a cocktail, it's always happy hour somewhere, and enjoy the show. Now, here's your host, Scott Fullerton.
Well, howdy, 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 everybody. Welcome to the Left of Straight Show. It is Tuesday, January 8th, and as I said yesterday, Papa Bear has just awoken from a long winter's nap. We're back from our holiday hiatus. Yesterday was our first day back after 7 weeks. I always try to take Mondays, to take off the holidays from the Monday before Thanksgiving till the Monday after New Year, just because that's usually the hardest time to find some of our guests. They're all out and about doing their holiday fine. So we did have two holiday shows, December 17th and 18th, had over 30 of our good friends, celebrities, personalities, advocates come on the show on December 17th and 18th. Be sure to check those out. But we are back now for all new live shows every Monday and Tuesday right here on Blog Talk Radio and so many other places. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Scott Fullerton. If you hear some noise in the background, it's not my stomach rumbling. I did have dinner, but we are having one of our wonderful thunderstorms here in Northeast Ohio tonight. So we got some crashing thunder out there and some heavy rain, and so the mic might pick it up. I am not sure. But we have had, speaking of that, we've had a pretty mild winter here, guys. We are on, January 8th now, and we have not seen any snow sticking on our roads at all. Had a little bit stick on the grass, but no snow on the roads the entire season so far. Knock on wood here, we're supposed to have a relatively dry rest of January. We may have a little bit of snow over the next couple of days, but less than an inch. So I hate to say it, but I'm kind of happy global warming has come to Northeast Ohio, because I am not a snow shoveler. That's all there is to it. So anyway, guys, we have a great show for you today. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, our good buddy Randy Slavacek is coming on. Of course, he runs the Randy Report and does so much other reporting on pop culture and politics. And always love when Randy comes on, because it's real easy show. He has so much information in him, and we just get to gab. So it's a good time. He'll be on just a couple of minutes here. We have lots to talk about in both entertainment and pop culture and politics, of course. So we'll talk that in just a little bit. If you missed yesterday's show, I hope you go check it out. We had from the checked. We had our newest radio show right here on Left of Straight Radio Network. Aries Check from the Check is a weekly mental health show where you check yourself before you wreck yourself. And he gives some of the positive ways to look at mental health. And he has some great guests on and gives it a great way to talk about the subject and erasing the stigma. That's on every Thursday night here on Left of Straight Radio Network at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. So he was on yesterday. Plus, we had Kenneth Mogenbeck, fantastic singer-songwriter. He has a new single out called Holy Water, written by the one and only Tiffany of I Think You're Alone fame and her co-writer. We had a great chance with him. That song is it's debuted now in an acoustic version. And the regular version and video comes out on February 4th. So check that out. I told everyone yesterday, ever since the show's been started, I've had one feed for it on iTunes and on Spreaker and here on Blog Talk Radio, where you can catch all of the Left of Straight Network radio programming. So it shows the Left of Straight shows, Voices for Change 2.0, Standing on Our Soapbox, now the Check Check, couple of new shows we'll be adding up. But starting this season, as we, believe it or not, are in our fourth year here, I have put some separate listings for just the Left of Straight Show. So if you only want to follow the Left of Straight Show, I've added it singularly onto Spotify, own place on iTunes, on Google Podcasts, on Stitcher, on Pocket Podcast, on Breaker, on Radio Public. So if you listen to any of your podcasts on there, look up the Left of Straight Show. You can subscribe on some of your favorite things. We're available everywhere now. iHeart is the next place to go. But please check those out. Also, we are about 90% done with the new Left of Straight website. I hope you'll go check it out at www.leftofstraight.com. That's LEFTOFSTR and the number 8.com, how we put Left of Straight all the time. It's about 90% done. And we got all sorts of fun new information on there. You can apply to be a guest on there. You can recommend other people to be a guest. We have contests coming very soon. You can follow us on all sorts, gives all those places the podcast can be found, has our social media feeds on there. We're going to have contests very soon. So all sorts of fun stuff on there. Please check it out. Give me any suggestions you have of what you'd like to see us add to the website, and we will do that for you. And if you're not following me on social media, please do. On Instagram and Twitter, it's at Left of Straight. On Facebook, it's Left of Straight Show. I need to get Instagram up. I concentrated so much on Twitter when we started out that I never really concentrated on Instagram. And y'all know I don't like my picture taken. But I need to get my Instagram up. So if you're not following me on Instagram, please go to at Left of Straight. I need to get up to 10,000 so I can post links to things on there. Right now I'm only a little over 1,000. So we're trying to build up Instagram as we speak here. But all sorts of fun stuff to talk about, and I'm going to leave most of it till we get Randy on here in just a couple of moments because it's stuff that he's been covering as well. So we're going to have a fun day today talking about pop culture, politics, movies, theater, all the fun stuff. Let's go ahead and take a – when we come back, we're going to have Randy Slavacek on of The Randy Report. If you want to call in today and talk about anything that we talk about or anything that you want to know in entertainment, pop culture, or politics, please give us a call. It's 347-989-0126. Definitely hope to hear from you. Let's go ahead and play a little Steve Grand. He's in Puerto Vallarta right now. I just talked to him the other day. He's going to be on the show in just a couple of weeks. And this is his disciple. You're listening to Left of Straight Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. Be back with Randy Slavacek on the other side.
Jesus be my daddy, father my light. Waltz through my dreams, draped in white. Like a child, like a child. I ain't scared of dying. I'll be a loyal disciple till I get my fix. Desire. Come on to Mary, bring me a son. It's been a dark February, I'm just trying to move on. I ain't gonna end, so I'd like to live on in a song. So
we are back, guys. That was Steve Grant with Disciple down in Puerto Vallarta right now after his residency. When he came on the show last time, he was in Provincetown. Now he's in Puerto Vallarta. He'll be calling in from there at the end of the month. Guys, I'm always excited when my guest comes on today. He's been a great friend of the show for the entire run we've been here. He is a pop culture and political guru. Of course, an actor himself, a choreographer himself, a dancer himself, a singer. He does it all. Please welcome back to the show my buddy, Mr. Randy Slavacek. Randy, how you doing, buddy?
I'm awesome. Happy New Year, Scott.
Happy New Year's to you. How is everything in beautiful downtown Las Vegas today? Are you home?
I am home. We're a little overcast, but, you know, life is good in Las Vegas. I never would have dreamed that I would be saying at this point in my life, oh, I'm a Las Vegan, but I love it. I do. I love Las Vegas. Great city, great town. We love the weather and no state taxes, so there you go.
There you go. You got to love that. Well, we had, like I said, I've bragged about it ever since I come back in August. You and Michael showed us such a great time when Mom and I went there for the big gay road trip in August, and we are coming back this year in June, so I hope you guys are going to be in
Woo-hoo!
Town. We'll have to
absolutely
do it all again. It'll be
fun. Chippendales!
We'll have to see if we can. Yeah, there you go. We'll have to have a meal. It'll be fun, and we'll nosh a bit and just have a good old time.
Definitely.
Well, let's go ahead and jump right into it. You are the pop culture guru. You love politics as much as I do. So we might as well start with first things first. Of course, we just had the Golden Globes this past weekend. We got to get into that. Tell me about your overall thoughts to start with. And I'll jump
in.
You know,
it was an interesting Globes, first of all, because our co-hosts, they went an oddly unfunny approach to me. I didn't really care for Sandra Oh as the co-host and Sandberg. At one point, you know, a lot of people made a lot of Sandra Oh's I see you moment, and she started talking. And I can honestly tell you, Scott, I thought she was setting up a joke because she was kind of like in mid-joke mode. It was, and I kept waiting for the punchline and went, oh, that was serious. Oops. But past that, you know, a lot of great things happened. Obviously, you know, Green Book did very well. A lot of LGBT themed projects did really well. Green Book did well. The assassination of Gianni Versace did well. And, one more, what was it? Oh, Bohemian Rhapsody did great. You know, all of them won their top awards in their category, and I thought that was awesome. I was disappointed that Billy Porter did not win for lead actor in a TV series. Those are my dogs protecting me. They're making sure that I am so safe.
There you go.
But I was disappointed that Billy Porter didn't win for his role as Pray Tell on Pose, and also that Pose didn't win, because I think both have been so groundbreaking, but I think it was the Americans that won instead, and that's been lauded by the critics, so I totally get that. And so, you know, every award show is we're pulling for our favorites, and, you know, the Hollywood Foreign Press has their own take on things. It's always a slightly different kind of view of entertainment than, for instance, the Oscars or the Emmys. You know, the Hollywood Foreign Press, they see things just a little differently. So, but it was good. It was entertaining
and only
enough.
88 of them too. I think it's 88 Hollywood Foreign Press members. So it's such a small group that they tend to have groupthink as opposed to the Academy that has all the thousands of different people in the different categories. So it does change things up a lot, which makes for kind of a wild and crazy show.
Oh, absolutely. I love that. By the way, I love that Roma won for Best Foreign Film. I did like that. I love Carol Burnett's appearance and her honor. And that was what the two highlights for me really were, Carol Burnett's speech and talking about the fact, you know, you couldn't do today what we did back then in terms of her awesome variety show. You couldn't employ all those dancers. You couldn't employ all those musicians. You couldn't do, I mean, it's just simply, it couldn't be done today. And she was so wistful and touching the way she spoke about it with respect, without boasting, but it was so touching. And the other thing that I really did love, I know it upset a ton of people, especially the gay crowd, was Glenn Close winning for Best Actress in a Movie over Lady Gaga in a drama. And,
right.
But I have to tell you, I think it's well-deserved. You know, Glenn Close is an absolute artist. And such a veteran of movies for so many years. I think this was her 13th nomination. This is her third or fourth win. But she's never won at the Oscars. And I'm hoping this, you know, makes the Oscar voters take a second look at her. You know, everybody was so convinced that it was going to be Lady Gaga. And,
right.
You know, it didn't bother me at all. And I also thought that Glenn Close's speech about finding personal fulfillment and thinking of her mother and that people need to step back, especially women, you know, they have their families, they have their husbands, they have their partners, whoever, but her mother expressed that she felt that she hadn't done anything with her life at the age of 80. And I thought it was
right.
Very touching. And I was glad that the audience really responded to that personal fulfillment is just as important as family and all of that around us, is we should take time to fulfill ourselves and fulfill the goals that we personally hold. So those are my two favorite moments, absolutely, were Carol Burnett and Glenn Close's speech.
I definitely agree with Carol Burnett. I think that Glenn Close is a magnificent actress. I mean, I used to watch The Shield, and when she came on that, she did some amazing work on that as well. I didn't hate and Sandberg, but they weren't great, that's for darn sure. I think Amy Poehler and Maya Rudolph stole the show and are going to be hosting
next
year.
I'm with you, yeah.
I thought they were absolutely hilarious. I'm not a fashion guru by any sense, but talking Billy Porter, we got to talk about Best Dress. His little ensemble on the carpet there was absolutely amazing.
Yes,
oh my goodness. And
gorgeous.
I'm still scratching my head over Timothy Chalamet's harness. That was such a sad ripoff, little like a plastic, I don't know what it was. It was very sad. But who am I to see fashion, I guess? But I thought that was a little crazy.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Obviously, we all know that Adam Rippon wore his, you know, very incredible harness last year over his tux. It totally worked for me last year at the Oscars. And it seemed like Timothy Chalamet was doing a similar thing with a kind of beaded harness, or someone else called it a bib or something else.
They
it didn't
it
kind
bedazzled.
Of register with
They
me.
Called it all sorts of things.
Bedazzled,
it
yeah.
It was crazy. I don't understand. Stand.
Yeah, it didn't
I
kind
do
of really land.
Jump on to anything else real quick, because you hit on it on your Randy report, and I am such a huge fan of Billy Porter's. Let's take 40 seconds here and just play a clip of his "Love the Pain Away" that he just kind of debuted. I downloaded that. It's amazing. We're gonna play just like 40 seconds real quick of it, and we'll come back on the other side here. Okay, this is Billy Porter's called "Love the Pain Away." You got to listen to the full song on this. He wrote it quite a few years ago near Columbine, but it's an amazing song. We'll play a quick clip here, guys.
We're a people who go out of our way to ignore each other. It's not that we fight about who's wrong, what's right. Now it's time to lay aside every way. Speak to your neighbor like a stranger right in the face. Say I love you. There are no words that I can say. Can't go back how we used to be.
No.
We gotta feel it, to heal it.
All
that we can do to make a change. Love the pain away.
Oh, yeah.
As the clouds lift, I've seen the walls of the world.
I can listen to him all day long. I love his voice. It's amazing.
Isn't that fantastic? And, you know, I really encourage people to check out the full video, because he he's so generous with the camera on the video, because he lets every member of his band, his backup singers, all of them take a turn in the spotlight. And it just goes to show how secure that Billy is, that he makes sure that everybody gets a chance to shine in that video. I loved it.
Yeah, you know, it was so nice, and I really did enjoy it. In fact, I think I first saw it on your Randy Report, but I'd heard about it, but I'd not seen that it had come out yet. So that was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Let's kind of jump from Golden Globes to Academy Awards coming up in March. It's had all this controversy and still officially does not have a host since Kevin Hart had to walk away from getting a lot of social media backlash over some older tweets against the LGBT community. Of course, Ellen had this one-hour show devoted only to him on Friday, and that in itself brought its own backlash with a great speech, I thought, from Don Lemon that night. Give me your thoughts on that whole thing.
Well, first of all, I agree with you completely with the Don Lemon thing. I'm not always the biggest Don Lemon champion, but I will say I think that Don Lemon's I think he was spot on here. I really do. Don went on the air and he talked about the fact that, you know, Kevin Hart. Well, first of all, a few things. Don Lemon noted, as did Vulture.com, who did a deep dive into all of the interviews that Kevin Hart has done in over the past 10 years, that, you know, while Kevin Hart says he's apologized for this, I've addressed this, I've apologized over and over. The fact of the matter is no one in journalism seems to be able to find all those apologies. He said,
no,
you know,
he's explained it, but he's never apologized for it. There's
exactly
been
that's a good word
press,
for it,
but no apologies.
Yeah. And so he finally did apologize in December after he stepped down. So he did apologize, but it was after the fact. And, you know, the other thing that's been noted was the appearance on Ellen. He almost seemed to be. And I'll admit up front also, I was torn on this subject, because on one hand, I think it's important that we do give forgiveness to people who apologize earnestly. I really do believe that. I think that needs to be said.
Right.
People can change. People can become aware. I think that's a very valid point. And we should accept apologies, but he hadn't given one until now. The other thing being that on the show with Ellen, he almost seemed to be inconvenienced or frustrated that he had to keep addressing this. Like, this is really bothering me. I do understand over the weekend that Kevin Hart called Don Lemon, and Don has said on Twitter and in social media today that he took the call and he said he would do it completely off the record so that Kevin could speak freely. And along the way, part of what Kevin Hart apparently said was Don Lemon had invited him to take this moment into a teaching moment and become an LGBT ally, that instead of moving on from this moment, to take the opportunity to, you know, become an ally to the LGBTQ community. And in the phone call, apparently Hart said that really doesn't interest him, that that's not where his heart is. And he just wants to move on. He says he's riding with us in terms of equal rights, but being an ally isn't his thing right now. And so, as Don Lemon says, we can take that or leave it as we want. I know how I take it.
Right, right. Yeah, it doesn't sit well with me, I got to tell you. I didn't hear that part yet.
And,
yeah, it doesn't sit well with me.
Yeah, again, I want to underscore that, you know, people can change, people can learn, people can grow, people can realize, oh my God, I was just making a joke, you know, that's just what we say to each other back in the day, you know, oh, that's so gay or something. But, you know, society evolves every single day, and I think it's important that we let people, you know, evolve. As many people will note, that Barack Obama had to evolve on marriage equality, so did Hillary Clinton, so did many of our heroes. Things may take time, and we have to allow them to do that. But Kevin Hart still – and one other thing I'll say about the Kevin Hart thing while I'm on it, and I won't keep going. But when he – Kevin Hart addressed this on his podcast this week, and he said something to the effect of, once more, Kevin Hart is apologizing for this, speaking in the third person, which is kind of odd. That's very Trumpian to me. You know, Donald Trump always says Trump.
Yeah.
Whenever anyone speaks in the third person, it just feels a little odd. I don't know if there's anything to be read into that, but I just, it's not my thing.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I agree. Like I said, I was the same way. I think Ellen was okay when she was saying that part about we do need to forgive, and it was 10 years old. I think where she stepped into it is where she said you can't let the haters win, because the haters make it seem like it was us, the LGBT community,
right,
were hating. And I don't think that was her smartest move. But I don't mind her talking about it with him and saying that we do need to move on and forgive. But unfortunately, she just went a little too far. But, yeah, it's
right.
What it is. We still don't have a host, and he may still host.
You know, that's what I hear. I hear he has officially said he's not going to do it because he's afraid at this point he doesn't have time to prepare properly, and that he thinks it would be a distraction, and that every little thing he did, he would become so self-conscious that he wouldn't do a good job as comedian Kevin Hart, because he would probably overthink things and it would kind of freeze him up, that he wouldn't be able to do his best job because of all of this now, which, I mean, it is what it is.
Right. And I'll give him a little of that. I mean, I think usually they have 3 or 4 months to prepare for this, because there's a lot of preparation that goes into it for a comedian. I mean, you think of Billy Crystal's monologues and everything. Those things don't happen overnight. So it's going to be tough for anybody to step in there. But, yeah, let's just –
well, you know,
that
they announced him – they announced his hosting in December. You know, they gave him a 2-month lead. And so, yeah, absolutely. It does take time. And, you know, the really brilliant hosts that we know from the past, you know, Billy Crystal certainly was the gold standard for many years. Johnny Carson, who just did it so effortlessly. You know, some people may be too young to remember Johnny Carson hosting it, but I grew up with Johnny Carson, you know, year after year. And no, you're absolutely – Billy Crystal was the man. And, you know, other people have done a good job too, but it's a tough gig. It is. And to thread that needle, not be too political, but know when to drop the right joke. And also hosting any of these award shows, it takes a truly brilliant in the moment performer to be able to pick up something that might've just landed in front of you. Maybe someone just said something in an acceptance speech, and to be able to riff off that brilliantly does not come out of every stand-up comedian or actor. It's not something that everyone can do. It's a tough gig, no doubt. It's absolutely
exactly
tough gig.
Exactly. Well, let's move on. While the Golden Globes were going on Sunday, we had last performances in 3 amazing Broadway shows that had some great LGBT representation. Torch Song Trilogy, of course, by Harvey Fierstein, starring Michael Urie, Once on This Island with the incredible Alex Newell from Glee, and Head Over Heels. It features some of my favorite Go-Go's music and had our good buddy Caroline Ray from Very Sordid Lives, Very Sordid Wedding. Did you have a chance to see any of these? Because I missed all 3 of them. I'm so bummed.
I can honestly say that this revival of Once on This Island is one of the best things I have ever seen on Broadway in my entire life. That sounds like hyperbole.
Wow.
As from previous visits here, many of your listeners know, I was an actor on Broadway for many years. Working in the theater was my life for many, many years. I still work in the theater. I did several shows on Broadway. I had several friends in Once on This Island. And I saw it having seen the original back in the 90s. That's how old I am. And I had friends in that, my dear friends Jerry McIntyre and Nikki Renee. And I had a little, you know, side eye for this production. I'm like, oh, I can't possibly be as good as the original. I can't possibly. And can I tell you, I started to vibrate before the show even began. The cast comes out in this whole like 15-minute prologue, and they're setting the scene on this beach before the storytelling begins. It was so full of heart. It was so full of joy. The director was just totally on point, Michael Arden, with his work. The way they crafted the story, it's a heartfelt story. It's about, you know, star-crossed lovers who can never be together, a girl from the wrong side of the island and a wealthy plantation owner's son. But it was just beautiful. It was beautifully sung. And the choreography, it was the same choreographer who did the TV presentation of Jesus Christ Superstar Live. And I've become enamored of Camille A. Brown, the choreographer. Camille A. Brown, I love her work. It's so organic. If you remember back to Jesus Christ Superstar Live early in the spring, it was just spectacular. And once on this island, it was just all so organic. All of the movement came out of the actors as if it really didn't look like they were dancing. It was just the moment they were in. I'm enamored of the show, and I loved it. I really did. I'm sad to hear it closed, but you know, I think it ran for 2 years, and 2 years for a revival is a long run. The exception, obviously, being Chicago the Musical, which I was in. It's still running. 22 years later, I was in it 20 years ago. I was one of the first replacements in Chicago the Musical 20 years ago, and that same production is still running on Broadway. Is that amazing or what? So, you know, other than Chicago, that's a good run. You know, I think Hello Dolly with Bette Midler only ran a year and a half, and, you know, other revivals. You mentioned Torch Song with Michael Urie, which – it was terrific. I saw it off Broadway. I didn't see it on Broadway. I saw the off Broadway production, which got such rave reviews. They moved it to Broadway, and it got great reviews when it opened on Broadway, like 2 months ago now, I think. It hasn't been there long.
Right.
And Michael Urie apparently said that they just couldn't seem to land with the Broadway ticket buyer, even though they got rave reviews. And Mercedes Ruehl plays his mother, who's brilliant. Michael is brilliant. And they did a really cool thing by taking – I saw the original – again, this is how old I am. I saw the original run of Torch Song Trilogy, as it was originally called, with Harvey Fierstein in the 80s when it was three acts. And what they've done is they've combined it into a tighter show now, so there aren't three acts anymore. But it was beautiful. It was very well done. So I'm sad to see that didn't last, because it should have. That's really going to be one that people are going to look back and go, why didn't this land? Why didn't it sell? I feel bad about
that. That was my very first LGBT movie with Matthew Broderick back in the day.
Yeah.
That was my first movie I saw was Torch Song, adapted, of course, from that. So. Yeah, I can't believe that once on this island was 2 years, I never made it there, but it is what it is. And speaking of dancing, you got to be a little happy about the whole Fosse FX thing coming up, Mr. Choreographer. Give us a little insight in that.
Oh, well, it's funny you bring that up. I posted about that today. During the Golden Globes, we got our first tease of the upcoming FX miniseries, Fosse/Verdon. And God, the tease could not be more perfect, because the thing is, let me back up a bit. When I went into Chicago, the Musical on Broadway, I of course had been a fan of the work that Bob Fosse did as an innovator and a choreographer and a director, and of Gwen Verdon, who I met a few times, and just, one of the greatest Broadway dancers ever, four-time Tony Award winner. I auditioned for Bob Fosse when I first got to New York. I famously made it to like the second round, and then I got cut. And when you would get cut by Bob Fosse, he would call your name and you step forward, and he would shake everyone's name, shake everyone's hand, and say, "Thank you. I'm sorry, but thank you for coming." So he shook my hand, thanked me for coming. I got it. It was for Big Deal. And I was honored that I even got to dance for him. But then when Chicago happened for me in 1998, you don't want to dip into the Chicago world without really finding a whole foundation of Fosse. So I did tons and tons and tons of research on all of the movement, the intention behind the movement, his movies, his shows. And the great thing about this video, and that's the point I'm coming to, is the great thing about this video tease for Fosse Verdon, is it's everything he was. You know, all these really quick shots, you know, this red-blue moody lighting, jazz hands, finger snaps, toe tapping. You know, we've got to have a girl straddling a chair somewhere. That's going to be a Fosse thing. But it's quick, but it just looks fantastic. And, of course, I'm a big fan of Michelle Williams and Sam Rockwell. So I think it looks awesome. I think it's going to premiere in April on FX.
Yes, yes. I think that's going to be exciting, too, and I'm looking forward to getting your take on that when that comes. While we're in TV land, let's talk a little bit more TV here. This whole Bird Box phenomenon on Netflix, are you any part of that? I'm not interested in seeing it. I don't watch any style movies to begin with, even though you never see a bad guy in this or anything. But I guess there's like a Bird Box challenge that Netflix is saying keep away from. People are actually walking in the streets blindfolded, getting hit by cars and stuff. But what have you heard about this? What's your take on it? Have you decided to watch that or not?
I have not. I know about it. I've done my research because I have to write about these things. But it horror movie. I'm with you, Scott. Horror movies are not my thing. My brother was just here for 2 weeks for Christmas, and apparently all my brother watches, his white noise, are horror movies. And I'm like, great, that's awesome. But as I understand the story, the lead characters in the film on Netflix have to make their way downriver blindfolded because if they see this creature, it leads to their death or something. And so what you were alluding to, though, is there's turned into this challenge where people are trying to go through their entire day blindfolded and, like, clean their homes, maybe cook, maybe do different – I don't know. And Netflix had to, like, tweet, please do not try and recreate this challenge. Please do not do this at home. This is dangerous. Please do not try and cook while you're blindfolded. God, pop culture, you got to love it. Somebody's got to take something and run with it the wrong way, don't they?
It's so funny. I did hear one interesting thing on it. Some people were extrapolating it to social media where you need to keep yourself – how social media is this monster and you need to blind yourself from it with everything that's going on nowadays. Well, that could be something worth exploring down the line, but – have no,
oh, that's a cool
to
metaphor.
Damn movie.
Oh,
I thought
either,
it was, actually.
Either.
I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, great metaphor. I wish I thought of that. That's kind of cool.
Now, I know you're a comic fan, not quite as geeky as I am. Did you happen to watch the Arrowverse Elseworlds trilogy?
I haven't yet, but I am going to watch it. I know, and it's going to air again, I think. Did it air again last night or part of it? Because that's the crossover where we got to meet Batwoman, correct?
Exactly right.
And we have news about that because it was so successful in the LGBTQ world. The awesome thing about this is they introduced the character Batwoman in the crossover in the Arrowverse, and now they've announced that a pilot for a Batwoman series is going to be shot. They haven't said if it's going to be picked up or not, but there will be a pilot done for Batwoman. And for our community, the thing that's really cool is Batwoman is the first openly lesbian DC character to get like this kind of exposure and like have a role
right.
in all of CW series things. And, you know, I'm a huge – oh, that's one more thing about CW. My brother had – while he was visiting, since we brought it up, he had never seen Supergirl. And so I have Netflix, and obviously you can binge watch everything. My brother became enamored with binge watching all of Supergirl in like a week. And,
nice.
You know, I love it was super cool. He loved it. And, you know, I love all the CW shows. I love The Flash. I love Arrow. I love Supergirl. Legends of Tomorrow. I catch up on Legends of Tomorrow. But I think they're great. I think they always use the characters and present such really positive allegories of better ways to living our best life and being the heroes that we could all be in our own lives and everything. But it was fun to watch some of Supergirl as my brother binge watched it again. And of course, Mon-El is so awesomely cute. I could just have him on
my
screen
goodness,
anytime.
Yeah. Exactly. Oof. Chris, I forget his last name, but oh my goodness, he is enjoyable to watch. That is for sure.
Oof. Oof. But yes, Batwoman.
Well,
so we got that coming. Did you like the crossover?
Exactly. I love the crossover. I thought it was done very well. It's set up, and I don't know if you probably read on it and everything, but it's set up next year's crossover already, Crisis on Infinite Earths, which is one of the hugest projects that the DC universe ever took on, was a huge comic book thing where they consolidated everything. And that the very last 5 seconds of the crossover show on CW, they said coming next year, Crisis on Infinite Earths. So everyone's all freaking out about it. So it's going to be exciting to see what happens.
Fans must have lost their minds at that, I'm certain. Because that is,
they're absolutely right.
Really
one of
the biggest storylines in the history of DC Comics. Yeah.
I am looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to Batwoman. I can never remember her name. I know it's like, I always try to call her Candace Kane, who of course we know is,
Kate Kane.
Of course,
is
famous being transgender. But Kate Kane. I knew her last name.
Yeah,
was
and Ruby Rose.
Call her Candace. It's like, wrong person.
Well, now, you know, here's the geek that I am. I remember the original Batwoman character from like the 1950s and 60s Batman comic book series. She was really the first, but she wasn't a lesbian, and she was kind of like a socialite who just kind of played with this. And there was an original Batgirl, but she wasn't, I think it was her niece. It was kind of like a silly thing that they made a few appearances,
right.
And it wasn't Yvonne Craig in the TV series Batman, who we all adored. Yvonne Craig is a Batgirl. But yeah, you know, it's interesting that they're reviving this character as this really tough, gorgeous lesbian character. So it's awesome.
I am excited about it. All right, well, there's a few more things I want to talk about, entertainment, and then we got to pop into political field. Let's take a quick break for anyone that's listened so they can get their heads back on, because I know we give them a lot of information out there. Let's play a little Charlie Peck Home. When we come back, we're going to have Randy Klavacek back with me talking a little more pop culture. Then we're going to delve into a little bit of politics. We have 45 going on TV tonight, and oh, my God, we can talk about that forever. We'll try to keep that down as much as we can, but you're listening to Left the Straight Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. And we are back. That was Charlie Peck Home. Guys, today my special guest is blogger, writer, singer. He does it all, Mr. Randy Klavacek. Randy, welcome back to the show. Let's go a little bit more into pop culture. There's so much stuff going on. This is all just from January 1st. We're only a week in here. And then we'll jump into a little bit of politics. You have the inside buzz there in Vegas. Let's kind of briefly touch about Britney Spears had to postpone or even cancel her residency at MGM Park. Have you heard any buzz around town about that?
I have. You know, it's interesting. I saw the announcement. I wrote about it for Instinct Magazine. As we all probably know by now, Britney took to her social media last week and announced that she would not be opening her new show at the Park MGM. It was going to be titled Domination. It was a follow-up to her first residency, which was going to be, you know, just a few dozen performances, and it lasted 4 years. That was Piece of Me that ran over at Planet Hollywood here in Las Vegas. It had closed a year ago, and I guess MGM went to her and said, hey, we'll give you the park MGM, and we'll give you this, and we'd love to have you come to this. And she was going to come do a whole new show. And then her father, Jamie, apparently suffered a ruptured colon, I believe, about a month or two ago. Went in the hospital. He was in the hospital for almost a month. He's still recuperating. And so she has – it's interesting. A lot of people phrase the story in the press saying that she's postponed it. But in her notes, all she said was she would not be performing her new show. So I reported it as a cancellation. A postponement usually lists a date that they're actually going to, you know, – debut or premiere. The one thing I can add to it, though, being here in Las Vegas, is I don't know if you subscribe to Groupon in your town.
I don't subscribe, but I know what it is. Yeah, I've used it. I don't subscribe.
Yeah. Once you join it, you get the email every day of like Groupons. And for people who don't know what Groupon is, if it's not in your town, it's a company. They collect deals on services, on restaurants, on movies, shows, or something. You often see, like, you know, this $120 massage at this great spa. You can buy it now for only $49. You know, you can get a lot of great things discounted in Las Vegas. Groupon does a lot of ticket sales for shows, blah, blah, blah. And the reason I bring this up is even before Britney was set to premiere her show, I think it was going to be in February, her show was already selling tickets on Groupon here in Las Vegas. So your mind is going exactly where mine went. I don't know. But usually you only go on half-price tickets when you're not selling well. No one sells sold-out tickets on half-price. So I have to wonder, the rumor I was hearing from some people is that she was not selling so well and that, you know, there was the Groupon thing and people saw that. And so maybe she wasn't selling well, and that was also part of – I'm not saying her father didn't suffer, you know, ruptured colon or whatever. He did.
Right, right.
And I certainly wish him well, but I think it's possible that that was just
That's
one
why
reason why
the
she didn't
scoop on these things. Exactly. Let's go to another –
And, you know, I will say one more
icon.
Thing.
We had a pop-up of Madonna at Stonewall not too long ago.
Yeah.
That's kind of exciting.
Yes. Can you imagine being the crowd? My friend Matt Rettenmund, who's the blogger at boyculture.com. Matt is the biggest, I can say that Matt literally wrote the book on Madonna. And when I say wrote the book, he literally wrote Encyclopedia Madonica is the name of the book.
Oh, that's awesome.
He literally wrote the book on Madonna, and he's the biggest expert. And he heard, he was tipped off. He lives in New York City. He was tipped off New Year's Eve. He ran down to the Stonewall Inn and planted himself right in front of the space where he guessed she'd be appearing. He was right. And so he was right there for the whole thing. She did appear right at midnight. She came out. She addressed the crowd. She, as you know, she's been named a Stonewall Ambassador because 2019 is the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots. And World Pride will be held in New York City this year, and she's been named as the Stonewall Ambassador to bring attention to the 50th anniversary of Stonewall. And I anticipate that she's probably going to have something to do with World Pride and maybe appear or something. That would be huge to have Madonna there. But she gave a speech about LGBTQ rights and the uprising and the anniversary, and then she sang an acoustic version of Like a Prayer, and then did a duet of Elvis's Can't Help Falling in Love with Her Son David, and the audience lost their mind, and then off into the night she
went.
So that was pretty cool, though.
That
you know, because the Stonewall is small, so how super.
Sure.
She even commented, like, this is the smallest stage I've ever been on. And I'm certain it was.
Truth to that. Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Another thing I just read today, I don't know if it's been on your radar, but Ewan McGregor, who's done such great roles in so many things, Moulin Rouge especially comes to mind, and all his other acting, he has landed the role of out designer Halston. It's being developed by Legendary Television. It's being directed by the Gianni Versace director, Dan Minahan. That's going to be kind of an exciting thing.
It is. And what, you know, he's going to executive produce and star in it. Which I think is awesome. This is not his first time heading into a gay role. You know, he's not afraid of that. He's so charming. I just think he's so charming. You know, I was doing research about this. One of the things I didn't know, because you and I are around the same age, I think, or I'm older than you are. But, you know, I grew up knowing that Halston was this, you know, amazing star celebrity fashion designer. And, you know, during my college years, high school years and college years, you know, Studio 54 in New York was the big thing, and Halston was known to hang out there, and his clients included Elizabeth Taylor and Liza Minnelli. You know what I did not know was he got his start, his big break was in 1961. He designed Jackie Kennedy's pink pillbox hat for John F. Kennedy's presidential inauguration. That was his. He was a milliner. He was a hat designer. And because of, you know, obviously Jackie Kennedy was like the first big fashion maven of first ladies, and everybody wanted to mimic her and emulate her. And that's what set him on this road, was designing that little pillbox hat. And then he went on to having obviously fashion lines and everything. And Lauren Bacall was a client, Angelica Houston, Bianca Jagger, Margot Hemingway. And he also, one thing he did that I love, people don't know this, but I choreographed an off-Broadway musical called Playing Crazy. And part of the vision for it, it was about stewardesses in the 1960s. And it was very groovy. And you and I have talked, I love groovy things. I love the 60s. I love the 70s. I love variety specials from back then. But part of the look for that off-Broadway show was derived from the fact that the very groovy uniforms that Halston designed for Braniff Airways, which was an airline that's long gone. But back in the day, they had like, he designed these mini dresses with these like knee high boots. And it was the super coolest thing ever. So not only did he design for celebrities, but he designed for the Girl Scouts and the New York Police Department and Braniff Airways. Super cool. I do remember this though. His downfall began in 1982. He started designing a line for JCPenney, which did not, it kind of lowered his star as this mature designer. Now you're designing for JCPenney. And it started to affect his company. And over the years, basically the short version of the story was his company was finally acquired by Revlon, and he lost control of it. And he, as many people know, died in 1990 of AIDS-related complications. He was only 57 years old. Right. It's a great story to tell. And Ewan McGregor will be awesome, I think. Great choice for it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great show. So I haven't researched that great, so now I'm going to have to look into that because I didn't know a lot of those facts. That is kind of awesome. Now, speaking of our ages, and I hate to show my age on air, but I'm going to, for a little bit of sad news, We need to talk about Captain Tennille's Daryl Dragon passing away of renal failure. I got to tell you, Captain Tennille was one of my very first, and I hate to say this out loud, 8-track takes.
Oh, yeah. Woo! Love it.
Oh,
yes. Yes. Slam that 8-track
story,
in that
but
place.
I love myself a little Captain Tennille. What about you?
Oh, my gosh. Me too. You know, the first song I think of is Muskrat Love, the most unpredictable, unexpected song title in the history of music, Muskrat Love, complete with muskrat sounds at the end of the song, but it was fun.
Right.
And I love them. I remember they had a one summer variety series, and, you know, he was always so quiet. Like, he never spoke. He wore the glasses. He wore the captain's hat. And
right.
he was very handsome, very charismatic in his own quiet way. But Tony Tennille was really the focus. And they were married, and they were a couple for a long time. But they divorced some years ago. She left him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of sad, because I think she wrote in her memoir that something to the effect of they had no sex life, where he never touched her in a romantic way over – something
right.
like 39 years of marriage, I think it was 39 years of marriage, something like that. But he was, you know, very handsome and fun, and everyone thought he was a terrific musician. You know, he would rarely speak on the TV show. And, yeah, he was a big part. The 70s, they had huge hits in the 70s with Muskrat Love, Oh God, Do That to Me One More Time.
Right. Love Will Keep Us Together.
So
of course,
many. Yes, right. Love Will Keep Us Together. What a great song. Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
So, yeah, that was
bad.
That
shtick was being that strong, solid tie. And even though they were both very young, I think he had a big LGBT following as being like a daddy type with that sailor hat and everything. Even though he looked
very
young, he kind of had
absolutely.
Little quiet masculinity to him that was pretty cool and alluring, I thought. But, yeah, it was.
Oh,
it's,
completely.
It was nice that she was by his side, though, at the end. So even though they had all that turmoil in the relationship, and I remember having to read about all that she was right by his side at the end, which was kind of cool. And going on the opposite side of death, we have, which I'm so glad, I was waiting for you to – I was stalking you on social media ever since I went down my little grocery aisle and saw that Olivia Newton-John was dying. And we had this wonderful video from her on New Year's Eve. That was so exciting. I was trolling you, waiting for you to give me something, and you were the first person to let me break that I saw that on. But how exciting was that to see her so bubbly and full of life on that video?
I'm so glad you brought that up. You know, as many people know, my husband is her publicist, and I've known Olivia for many years now because of that. And what had happened, if you hadn't been paying attention to your grocery store tabloids, to the listeners, is the National Enquirer, that bastion of journalistic integrity, you can take that for sarcasm or not, however you feel. But the National Enquirer announced in its headlines that Olivia only had weeks to live. She was clinging to life, I think was one phrase. Then RadarOnline.com picked it up, and they ran with it. And then that was 1 week. And then by the next week, all of the rumors had trickled down to Australia. The Australia media picked it all up, and they ran with it too. And it just got to be ridiculous. The fact of the matter is, Olivia's breast cancer did return last year, and she shared this with the public, but it's a chronic illness that can be treated, and she can live many years. I don't think there's a cure for it because it's metastasized to her hip bone, but which she shared. I'm not speaking out of turn, but it is
right.
something that can be lived with and can be just as a chronic illness. But all of these people were declaring her near death, and that Chloe, her daughter, was rushing to the altar to get married so that her mother could see her marry before she died. And none of it was true. None of it. None of it. And so she had actually been on holiday, and, you know, she wasn't going to interrupt her holiday for some stupid tabloid thing. But finally,
right.
My husband Mike said to her, you know, you really should say something. And so as casual as you, and it's a beautiful video, it's a little iPhone video. She just went out in her backyard and he said, as you know, she said, you know, Happy New Year. The rumors of my death have been greatly exaggerated, with a laugh. She looks glowing. She looks awesome. And
she looks amazing.
Wished everyone a Happy New Year and thank you for supporting her and her Cancer and Wellness Center in Australia, in Melbourne, Australia. And that was it. It was all it needed to be. And, you know, in my post on the Randy Report, I noted with glee that she really gave a master class in how to deal with tabloids in doing that. She didn't call people out. She didn't name the National Enquirer. She didn't name Radar Online. She didn't. All she had to do was be her bubbly, wonderful self. And right. With a cute line of, you know, the rumors of my death have been greatly exaggerated, with a smile, she put it all, and she made them all look silly without naming them. And I thought that was really a classy, graceful way to handle it.
Agreed. Well, I was, as soon as I saw that, I knew something was going to be coming. So I was watching your feed even more than I usually do. Let's do a transition from politics and from entertainment to politics by this little story here, and then we'll go into Paul. We only have about 10 minutes left here. But I love Star Trek Discovery. I love Anthony Rapp. I love Wilson Cruz. They're getting premiered their second season January 17th. Wilson Cruz's death has also been widely dismissed. He's coming back, even though he died in season one. He's coming back as a co-starring character, incurring as he was in the first season. So I'm looking forward to that, and the reason I even think about it is because I was really feeling sorry for Anthony Rapp the other day, because we had this media circus following Kevin Spacey's appearance in court on Nantucket. We had the Bronco chase from above. I felt like OJ all over again. This is like it's a serious charge, but it's the silliest thing I've seen in a long time. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I'm with you completely. You know, it's – you know. I don't know where this court case will go. It is interesting, the details that have come up about this. For people who may not know, back in 2016, Kevin Spacey dropped by a restaurant in Nantucket, Massachusetts, called the Club Car Restaurant, July 2016, and an 18-year-old guy who was working as a busboy, was a fan of Spacey, and after his shift ended at the restaurant, he asked to be introduced to him, and he spoke to Kevin Spacey. Interestingly, he lied about his age and told him he was 23 years old, not 18. Don't know why that happened. And
right.
As the short version of the story is basically, over the course of an hour, they shared several drinks, seven or eight drinks. They switched from beer to whiskey, and which led to eventually the allegation that Kevin Spacey groped him, grabbing his leg outside his pants. And then the 18-year-old boy said, boy, man, whatever, said that he unzipped his pants while they were standing at a piano while people were singing or playing or something, and groped and grabbed him inside his pants for a few minutes. It went on apparently something like 3 minutes. Now, the weird thing about the facts of the story are, you know, no one should be touched when they don't want to be. Apparently, the boy, though, did not say anything. He told investigators, first of all, the boy left when Kevin Spacey went to the bathroom. He went home, said something to his sister and mother, and tried to downplay it. He didn't speak to investigators for a year about it.
Right.
That's another interesting thing. And, you know, the mother, who was a former news anchor in town, went public with the accusation. That's why this is happening. And they say, you know, he touched him and he didn't want to be touched and he didn't want to know what to do. And the young boy didn't know how to handle it. And it scarred him now. But the boy admitted that – this is the interesting thing, and I'm not making anyone the victim or the guilty one, but the facts are, the boy in his testimony to investigators for the court filing said that, yes, he touched me for 3 minutes and he didn't say anything, nor did he walk away. And so Spacey's legal team is saying, you know, this was consensual. The boy didn't say anything. He was 18 years old, and he didn't say anything. Again, I want to underscore, no one should be touched if they don't want to be touched. But if you told Kevin Spacey, you're 23 years old, and you're sitting there having drink after drink with him, and then when he grabs your leg, you don't say anything, and then when he goes farther, you don't say anything. And this is according to the boy, the young man.
Right.
This isn't Spacey. So it's there's some mixed signals here. I don't know where it'll go, but these are the facts that have been entered into the record so far. So I just don't know. I think it's sad for everybody. As you mentioned, you know, poor Anthony Rapp, he has, you know, I think a real he began the entire fallout for Spacey by coming forward during the height of the Me Too movement over a year ago, saying that Spacey
right.
had approached him in his apartment when they were both on Broadway in the early 80s. And so it's all unfortunate, but I don't know about this whole thing in Nantucket. I just don't know. So,
yeah, it's going to be a little interesting to think to see how it plays out. All right,
yeah.
We're going to transfer into politics. I think we actually have a call in line. I'm going to go talk to him 1 second. I want you to talk a little bit before we get into the 45 speech tonight. Let's talk about some positive things. We have a huge new representation in Congress in the Democrats. We have transgender flags flying outside offices. We have hot outfits swearing in. We have some unfortunate swearing after being sworn in. Talk about that for a second. I'll be right back here, okay? Go ahead and
absolutely
jump in on that.
Well, I am excited in great part that with this Congress, the 116th Congress, we have the largest contingent of LGBTQ lawmakers now in the history of the United States. We now have two U.S. senators. Tammy Baldwin, who's the first out lesbian to be elected to the U.S. Senate, was reelected in the past midterms. And Kyrsten Sinema, who was elected in a very tight squeeze in deep red Arizona, was elected as a Democratic senator for Arizona now. And by the way, she looked awesome at her swearing in. She brought some serious style to her swearing in, and the other thing she brought to her swearing in was a law book. And being an atheist, she did not take the oath of office with her hand on a Bible, because she's, as I said, an atheist. She swore to uphold the Constitution with her hand on a law book, which I thought was fabulous. And as I mentioned, she looked amazing. We also have new members of Congress elected and returning members. There are 8 members of the House. And so it's the largest LGBTQ contingent we've ever had, which is awesome. We also, in the midterms, which makes me excited, and he's now taken office, is we have our first openly gay elected governor in Colorado, Jared Polis,
right.
which is fantastic. Right. And, you know, I also like the fact that as Nancy Pelosi was sworn back in as Speaker of the House, practically in her first breath as Speaker of the House, she underscored her support for the Equality Act, and she said it would be a top priority in this new Congress. Now, as you and I both know, there's no way, even if it is passed, and it could be passed in the House, it would go to the Senate and die an ugly death, because Mitch McConnell in the next 2 years is not going to bring up the Equality Act. It would not get the votes. It's just not going to happen. And God knows Donald Trump would probably veto the thing because the assault on the LGBTQ community since he took office has just been continuous. So, you know, it's not going to happen, but I appreciate any air that we get that way. So the fact that Nancy, you know, said it would be a top priority, and the more people hear about it, because one of the things about the Equality Act, I'll say really quickly, is a lot of people, as you know, believe that LGBTQ people are protected at work or in housing rights. But in 30 states, you can be evicted from your home, or you can be fired for being gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. People think that it's a protected class, and it's not. There are no federal protections. There are states, there are about 20. I'm fortunate to live in Nevada, where we've hit a home run here, and we have LGBT protections across the board. But in 30 states, that's not true. So any airtime that the idea of discussing the Equality Act can get some space is a good thing for me. So
exactly. And we had two backwards things kind of happen. We had the trans military ban got a small boost from a D.C. appeal circuit, but it's not really going to affect it immediately. And then we have, right, of course, that bonehead over Brazil that gets elected president, used to be an evangelical, that talks about removing all the equality forms from LGBT, and Trump tweets his huge support for him. So a couple setbacks as well in politics right now, but that's what we need, mm-hmm, stuff like Nancy to talk about these things. I agree 100%.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, Bolsonaro down in Brazil, he is so anti-LGBTQ that there was a 66% spike in November in same-sex marriage, same-sex weddings, because so many people, because he's vowed to uphold the sanctity of traditional marriage, as he says, between a man and a woman, that they took that as a threat that he would try and repeal same-sex marriage laws, which passed in 1013, I think. And so there was this huge spike in same-sex weddings because they were just afraid. And as a matter of fact, his new civil rights minister, who was a pastor, she's also anti-LGBTQ. She said, while the office is lay, this minister is very religious, and princes will be princes and princesses will be princesses, and there'll be no more ideological indoctrination, you know, all that kind of language that they pull out when they talk about accepting or being tolerant of gay people. So yeah, they've got some stuff on their hands down in Brazil.
And then we have, on the opposite end of that, which I'm very happy about, we have Canada up above us here creating a new $1 loonie to depict the 50th anniversary of decriminalizing homosexuality, something that, of course, Trudeau's father was a big part of, and Trudeau's all excited about doing. That's kind of cool stuff, too. I like that.
Isn't that cool? Can you imagine that happening in the United States? I'd love to try. What a leader Trudeau is. And, you know, that's something I would really – I hope in 2020 we have someone – and maybe we do, who comes in that same vein as Justin Trudeau, because what a leader, and someone who can just step up and say, we do apologize for this. It is the 50th anniversary. As a matter of fact, we're going to commemorate this and make sure that we remind everybody of this mistake that we corrected, and just a great way to handle it.
Exactly.
I love seeing that.
All right. Well, we're about out of time, so and I apologize that we had John on the line that wanted to get a question. I don't think we're going to have time for it, but let's go to 45 for two quick seconds here. Having this conference tonight, is it just going to be one lie after another? What are you expecting of this thing? I'm just so disappointed in everything. I don't even know what to expect, to tell you the truth.
I mean, seriously, that it's just about all he knows how to do, unfortunately. And I don't say that with glee. You know, we were all concerned when the election happened. And unfortunately, he's borne this out even worse than we could have ever imagined. Fortunately, the networks I did see just a few hours ago have agreed to give the Democrats Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi will be given a chance to offer a rebuttal response about the ongoing government shutdown and the issue of border security. You know, Donald Trump and his two things to listen for tonight. I'm just going to tell you what it's going to be right now. You're going to hear the word crisis over and over from Trump.
Right.
You're going to hear the word they've chosen to use, and you're hearing everyone, Kellyanne Conway used it today, someone else used it, Pence used it in an interview, crisis, 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 crisis. They're trying to lay the foundation so that possibly he can declare a national emergency. And in doing so, what people need to understand is national emergency means that, you know, a whole set of laws get triggered, martial law can be put into place, he can use our men and women in the military, the army, the navy, the air, whatever, he can call them up and have them build this wall if he wants, if that's what he does. And, you know, I don't think any of our men and women in uniform signed up so that they could go build a wall that nobody wants down on the Mexican border. So I do think you're going to hear a lot of that. You're going to hear a lot of crisis. And the one other thing you're going to hear is that he keeps coloring it as the Democrats don't care about border security, whereas the fact of the matter is, you know, Nancy and Chuck have both said, we care very much about it. We're more than happy to fund technology and more manpower at the border. We just think a wall is not the solution. It's outdated. It's old fashioned, and people get around it. People, and you know what? One thing that those folks down there that support Trump aren't paying attention to is, you know, to build a wall, Trump is going to have to enact eminent domain and take land from ranchers down in Texas.
Right.
Now, you want to bet that those ranchers are Republicans? Now, how do you think they're going to feel when, Trump, and then suddenly Trump is going to come take their land? Take their land. Now, that's not going to be real popular, I'll tell you that. But that's where all this goes. Nobody's thinking where that's going. They're all in the moment of arguing with, you know, Trump. No. Just let's open the government. You know, we have less security right now because, you know, the Homeland Security lands under what isn't being funded right now. So, you know, TSA, don't get on a plane right now. You're going to be standing in security lines for hours because those people are calling in because they don't want to work without being paid. It's all a big debacle. And he's going to try and, you know, left hand, watch my left hand over here. It's all about border security. When he just wants his wall to placate his supporters because he promised it to them. But remember, Scott, if you could remind me, who was going to pay for the wall again? Who was it?
I thought it was Mexico. I'm not sure.
I thought it was Mexico. So somehow, you know, one more lie I've got to point out. He's going to say about that, that Mexico is paying for it because of the tariffs and the new trade deal, the U.S.-Mexico-Canadian trade deal. But he keeps saying that that's paying for the wall. But it's not paying for the wall, folks, because that hasn't been ratified by Congress. And until it's ratified by Congress, it doesn't take effect. So there's none of that. None of that is taking in any money for anything. Plus, tariffs are paid by us on this side of the tariff, not on that side. It's just all such lies. It's so sad. Anyway, and you can Google all this.
It's lie
this
after lie.
News.
I mean, I was
really
so happy
it's
with
lie
Chris Wallace and getting Sarah Huckabee on Sunday with the 4,000 terrorists coming across. It's only six. And we talked about
six.
The president telling them they wish they would have done it, which is it's just lie after lie. Like you said, it's going to be interesting to see what happens tonight. I'm looking forward to the rebuttal. I wish they would have a fact checker with on the side of it, a little Chiron. But what can you do?
Yes.
Thanks for coming on the show. You know I love it every time you come on. I promise you get out here at a reasonable hour here because you have so much to do. I can't believe you have time for an hour interview with all the stuff you do for the Randy Report plus Instinct Magazine and Pop Buzz. Let everyone know where they can find you in all these places and they can follow you on social media, my friend.
Absolutely. Find me first and foremost at therandyreport.com, which is my blog where I write about pop culture, politics, and entertainment of interest to the LGBTQ community. You also find me every single day of the week on instinctmagazine.com, where I write about those same things, and gaypopbuzz.com. So that's where you can find me. Follow me on Twitter, Randy Slavacek. On Instagram, the same thing, at Randy Slavacek. And thank you so much, Scott, for having me on. I always have the best time with you. You are always so prepared. You always have so many great topics to talk about. We love all the same things. I love from politics to comic books. Love it. Thank you so much.
We are brothers from another mother, my friend. I appreciate
we
every
are.
Time you come on. You and Michael try to find a Monday or Tuesday in June. You can come spend in Palm Springs. It's not supposed to be as hot as it was last August, and we'll have to have you back on again in June, okay?
Definitely do that. Absolutely.
All right. Stay on the line for me, guys. We're going to finish out the show today with our good buddy Casey Lansdale. She has a new book coming out. We're going to talk to her next Monday. This is Living in the Moment. Thanks for tuning in to Left and Straight Show right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Easy to get off track, easy to lose your way. In a world that makes you believe there's no time to waste, that you gotta have it all, better have it all, better not slow down. Looking ahead got me looking in
We are back, guys. Tune in next week. We will have Casey Lansdale as one of our special guests. She has a new book coming out. We have Susan DeWitt Hall coming out, another fantastic author. Blake MacGyver, of course, our good friend and singer, and a couple other guests coming on. So that's next Monday and Tuesday right here, 2 o'clock Pacific, 5 o'clock Eastern time. Some great guests coming up over the next couple months. We got Perez Hilton coming back, Adam Buska and Jeff Parsley from the No Hate Project, singer Ricky Rebel, the shirtless violinist Matthew Olson, Cody Lassen, a Broadway producer that's bringing Tootsie to the stage, and of course our good friend Margaret Cho is coming back for her fourth appearance on the Leftist Right Show. That's all I have for you today. Please follow us online. Go to the new Left of Straight website. Tell me what you think of it, www.leftofstraight.com. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Left of Straight, and like our Facebook page, The Left of Straight Show. And we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.